Okay, well, let's get started. I'd like to introduce Cassandra Isaacson. She's with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and her talk today is going to be Understanding Aviation and the State's Role. So to kind of give us a little bit of a regulatory feel.
Thank you. It's really good to be here today. I think most folks think of the Minnesota Department of Transportation as, the agency that's out there plowing the roads all winter, only to throw up all the construction zones all summer and wreck your commute. And we certainly do a lot of that. But we also have a substantial role in aviation. I'm going to see if I can take this mic out because this podium is a little tall for me. Sorry. Perfect. I'm going to get over here where I can see more of you. And, but to start this morning, I'd first like to, are there any pilots in the room? Anyone who's a pilot? No one? Oh, uh-oh. You guys are going to be in trouble. We're going to start out this morning with a pop quiz. Can anyone tell me what some of those acronyms mean? Any guesses? There's certainly one up there that everyone in this room should know what it is. MSP. What's MSP? That's right. That's the airport at Minneapolis-St. Paul. The reason I put this up here is to let you know, aviation is a world in and of itself. There's a language, there's acronyms, there's actually an international language, and it is a huge, complex world. This is the tip of the iceberg. There are literally thousands of acronyms, thousands of ways of communicating information, and some of the very basics, MSL means sea level. There's things around altitude, the way we reference altitude, that if you are going to be in the business of unmanned aircraft, there's some things you should know, some things you should learn, because ultimately people are like, oh, well, I need to notify the airport, and I need to do this. When they come at you with this kind of stuff, you're not even going to know if you're doing something wrong if you don't understand the language of aviation. So I'm not going to go through all of these. They're one of the most important, of course you all knew MSP. That first one up there, the NAS, that's the National Air System. So that's the airspace that the sky above us all across the country. Oops, wrong way. There we go. So unmanned aircraft is exactly that. It's an aircraft without a person on board, right? And this definition of aircraft is actually in Minnesota state law. It's very close to the federal definition of aircraft. And so when you read that, any contrivance now known or hereafter invented, used, or designed for navigation. So that was pretty forward-looking when our legislature created that definition of aircraft. So when you think about all the radio-controlled aircraft the hobbyists have been using for over a century, I mean, there have been unmanned aircraft since before the Wright brothers took flight at Kitty Hawk. It's been around for a really long time. This definition covers that. And it's important to understand, I think a lot of people think that the federal government is trying to figure out how to regulate unmanned aircraft. The reality is they already regulate it, and so do we. It's that we've allowed them to be pretty unfettered in their use because it was pretty small activity, safe activity, very organized, all of that. As the use has exploded nationwide, FAA expects 1 million drones to be under Christmas trees this coming December. The world is changing, and it's changing rapidly, and so we're trying to figure out which regulations need to apply, which regulations don't need to apply. So, for example, unmanned aircraft probably don't need oxygen on board. Probably not something that's needed to be on that aircraft. So there's a lot of things like that that government's trying to work out. There are three types of UAS operations. There's public, civil, and model. Public is government. That's the way to think of that. When you think of traditional aircraft and what a government operation is, firefighting, search and rescue. It's when the aircraft itself is part of the the operation that's taking place. Transporting passengers, not really a governmental operation. So when Air Force One is flying the president, that's not really that public. It's more of a civil operation in terms of the regulatory environment, the kinds of rules that apply to that aircraft and that crew. Civil operations, non-governmental. So pretty much everyone else. That's going to be just your average citizen out flight seeing, that kind of thing. Civil would also cover airlines, all of those kinds of activities. So you have that public, which is government, civil, which is non-government, and then model. And so the reason that it's important to know that, and there's actually a website there that you could go and find out the detail on the, and I'm going to go over a couple of these in a little bit more detail, but it's important to understand what model means, because a lot of folks are out there talking about UAS and they're saying, well, I'm not making money. It's not about commerce. It's about the kind of operation. So it's really not about money or not money. It's about hobby or not hobby in the regulatory environment. Public, so for UAS, for unmanned aircraft, today, if you're going to be using a UAS, MnDOT uses them. You might have read in the news that we've been experimenting with using them to inspect bridges. That would be a public use. A certificate of waiver of authorization, and what that is, it's FAA saying, here's all these requirements for the aircraft, we're going to waive them for you. So that's what that is. So you have to have that certificate of waiver of authorization. Particular aircraft, particular purpose, particular area. Any of those three variables change, you got to go back to FAA and have a conversation with them. In Minnesota, we require registration of aircraft. There's a tax associated with that. But for public use, so for example, the University of Minnesota have quite a few of them registered with us. We waive the fees for the governmental use. But they're still required to register that aircraft with us. For civil, so now these are the folks that are perhaps in business, those kinds of activities. Even if you're a farmer and you're surveying your own crops, you're in a civil aircraft operation. You need, not only do you need the COA, you also need a Section 333 exemption. That Section 333 is regulations around the aircraft itself and making sure that it's airworthy and all of those kinds of things. So FAA requires those that you go and get those. In Minnesota, once FAA has assigned an N number, the tail number of the aircraft, you know, in the world of vehicles, you think of, you know, with cars you have license tabs. In aviation, the N number means that you're in the United States. Every country has a designation, so N tells someone that you're flying under the flag of the United States. And it's that tail number that you often see on airplanes. FAA assigns an N number. That means that you need to register that aircraft with the state of Minnesota. You need to pay us a fee. And for certain kind, and for most of the ones that we're seeing that FAA is registering, those tend to be ones that are in some kind of business, some kind of commerce, we also require a commercial operator's license. Both of those things have a fee and an insurance requirement. You're required to have liability insurance, just like you do with an automobile. Model or hobby aircraft. So they absolutely, you saw the definition of aircraft, they fall under both the state and federal regulatory framework today. In the 1980s, FAA implemented some voluntary operating standards for modelers. So it's things like not flying over the public, making sure the aircraft is airworthy, flying below certain altitudes, staying away from airports, being part of a community-based organization that has sort of ethics guidelines and all of those kinds of things. You know, aviation, like I said, it's sort of a culture, it's a world. And aviation, a lot of it, there's massive regulations, but the reality is there's a lot of self-regulation. And there's a lot of personal responsibility in the culture of aviation. Whenever you hear about a plane crash, what's the first thing people say? Pilot error. Even pilots say that. And it's because there's this culture of the pilot is responsible for that aircraft, responsible for the safety of the people on board that aircraft, and the safety of the people on the ground in case there was a crash. And so pilots take that very seriously, very personally, and so modelers do that as well. Modeling has been successful and safe for a century, and the reality is, though, some things are changing as more and more users are coming on. Because today, you know, you can go on Amazon, you can go to Costco, and buy a drone, and with an hour you're flying. Whereas much of the model aircraft that's been out there, someone would have to understand how to make it fly. They would build it themselves. They would have to, in order to get into that world of understanding how to make something fly, you had to learn a bit about aviation. You had to learn a bit about those acronyms. And so you understood the world you were getting into. In 2007, FAA further categorized UAS just to make sure there was no questions in anyone's mind. They issued an advisory circular. That includes that line of sight requirement a lot of folks talk about, so that when that UAS is flying, the operator has to be able to see it at all times. Here are some of the guidelines. The place that we send everyone to is know before you fly. If you have any questions whatsoever, if you're like, you know, I got this thing and I'm thinking about using it and I heard this presentation and it sounds like there's some rules I need to know, go to knowbeforeyoufly.org, read it. If you still have questions, call us, call FAA, because chances are, if you're kind of like, wow, you know, this seems like I'm not in a hobby, you're probably not. And so you probably do need to work with FAA and with us. There are some things still evolving, and it's going to continue for some time. It made the news a lot that FAA had issued rules. They had not issued the new rules. Congress mandated that they figure out how to integrate small, under 55-pound UAS into the airspace. They issued their notice of proposed rulemaking. They solicited feedback from the public, which is the way government does those things. And they received thousands of comments. They're going through them. In summer of 2016, we expect to see the rules. So those will be out, how you go about operating in the airspace. Just this last month, FAA announced they have formed a task force. They invited lots of different folks to be on that task force. They're moving forward with the possibility of registering all unmanned aircraft, not just those commercial operators that they've been registering so far. So this means hobbyists. This means you go to Amazon, you go to Costco, you go to Best Buy, you buy something for $25, you might be looking at having to get a tail number, registering with the federal government, registering with state government, paying taxes, all of those kinds of things. The task force is supposed to have its initial recommendations out this Friday, with implementation before the shopping season in December. I got to tell you, it's going to be challenging. A million aircraft. So to give you an example of a number, in the United States today, there are 500,000 private pilots. 500,000 private pilots. That's more than the entire rest of the world combined. And they're talking about a million new drones just this month, just in a month. So when you think about all that's already out there, we're talking millions of aircraft. And so it's going to be challenging. We're at the state really waiting to see what FAA is going to do on this. It's going to be a tough, it's going to be some interesting times, no doubt about that. Also, the Minnesota legislature, there have been many bills introduced in the last few sessions related to UAS. I anticipate there will be more, and we at MnDOT actually have some things we would like to see them do, and so we'll be advising them on that. So I think over the next 6 months we're going to see some rapidly evolving, rapid evolution in the regulatory environment. Some resources for you. FAA has been working on this app that you can use with your mobile devices before you fly. So then it can tell you if you're in the vicinity of an airport. And a lot of folks are able to look at a map and figure out where an airport is. But they're maybe not checking to see if there's a hospital nearby. Anyone have any idea why I'd want you to look for a hospital?
Life
flights, that's right. They're airports too, but they're not necessarily going to be on a lot of public airport kinds of maps. And that industry is actually very concerned about UAS for a lot of different reasons, not just the hobbyist out near a hospital, but if they're going to a crash scene and the media has a UAS over that crash scene, they can't land. They can't get anywhere near it. They have to maintain certain kinds of distances, and so they have a lot of concerns. There's a lot of groups that are concerned. Flying farmers are concerned. So know before you fly. MnDOT, we have a website up. We also have an email distribution list that you can sign up. So we're not going to fill your inbox with stuff. It's not really about marketing. It's more about just notifying people. So, for example, after November 20th, when FAA comes out with this information, we would probably send out an announcement to everyone saying, hey, here's what the facts are. If you go to FAA's website, that's faa.gov/UAS, you'll find all of that and some of that information I've talked about. And then finally, that smartphone app is coming. They have done, I think they tested over 1,000 folks with it, so it's out there. Normally, I would tell you I'm going to be around for the rest of the day, so if you had questions, but I actually got to go to Bemidji, and so there's my contact information. If you have questions, feel free to contact me. If you see something dangerous, feel free to contact me. If you see it immediately, call 911. I had a complaint just the other day. A motorist, you know, it's dark now when a lot of people are going into work, and he was driving along, and up popped a UAS. He was going over a bridge. One popped up. He was complaining because he thought he had read in the newspaper that MnDOT was using them for bridge inspections, and he thought it was us, and he thought that that was too dangerous to be doing that, you know, in the dark with, you know, because it startled him, and I could barely easily see someone crossing over to oncoming traffic or something like that in a situation. It wasn't. It was just someone out doing it. We couldn't find who it was, of course, but if you see something that seems odd or irresponsible, report it. That's really what you need to do. So, but there's my contact information, and hope you have a good rest of your session. Thank you.
Okay, we do have time for some questions. I encourage folks to kind of find some of these open seats up here.
Yes, sir.
Is this pretty common from state to state? Or?
Every state is different when it comes to aircraft registration. Every state has a state aviation agency, though, and they have different levels of involvement. Minnesota is unique in its insurance requirements. The Government Accountability Office, the GAO at the federal level, has actually recently done a study nationwide on that insurance piece. It would not surprise me if part of the regulatory environment, we start seeing some requirements nationwide around the insurance piece, because that's one way to have an industry self-regulate, because then the insurers will punish bad players by raising their rates. So there'll be a financial piece versus government having to do it.
And if I'm registered and certified and everything else in Minnesota, and I go across into Wisconsin, I'm out of bounds, right?
You need to talk to Wisconsin. That's right. It's not like an automobile. Aircraft are not the same. There's some similarities, but it's not quite the same. It could, because even with regular aircraft, sometimes people tell me, oh, well, I'm registered in Wisconsin. That doesn't matter. You still have to register in Minnesota. You still owe taxes in Minnesota.
What would be the registration fees in Minnesota?
So today, our base rate, it's an escalating rate based on value of aircraft. And today, our base rate is $100 a year. Now, that seems like a lot for something you maybe spent $30 on. And so that's one of the things I'm hoping our legislature is going to consider. We do have some specific call-outs in state law. So for example, hot air balloons are $25, but our state law specifically says hot air balloons. Everything else is this escalating rate, and so that's really all I can do right now is charge them $100. I'm hoping the legislature is going to help us with what a reasonable cost is. And there's some people that say, well, why should they have to pay anything? Ultimately, I do think the future is they will be using airports. They already have to use, in order to get weather information, some of the navigational, they're already using stuff that the state owns to do their navigation and all that, so they need to have a little skin in the game. Any other questions? If you think of more, feel free to send me an email. We're, like I said, we're really trying to get out there and educate folks. We think it's going to be really good for Minnesota's economy. You know, obviously you're going to talk about the fabulous impact it's going to have in agriculture. There's lots of good that's going to come from UAS. There's no doubt about it. We just want to be sure that tragedy isn't part of that. And so if you're out there flying, educate yourself. Go to know before you fly. And if you have questions, feel free to call us. Thanks.
Thank you.